Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's broadcast of the Alchemy of Light show. I am Jamil Graham, your host, to be welcoming you all. The Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today is a very auspicious day. It seems like every day is an auspicious day anymore. I'm not sure all of the science behind that, but I would love to discover it. I am celebrating today with David Lawns in our second hour, the release of his new CD, Cristofori's Dream, Re-Envisioned. And I am going to be offering in the first hour a bit of my ideas of re-envisioning our world and how our world could be re-envisioned into a place that reflects the true divinity, the true soul, the true being, the true longing that humanity has shared for all these years and years and years and years and years of truly expressing itself, of being one with its source creation.
Hello, good people. I'm back again, and welcome back, all of you, to the Alchemy of Light broadcast here on bbsradio.com. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and we are celebrating and exploring consciousness and re-envisioning our world. We have new technical learning going on and a new connection. We have a new connection. So, what I really am wanting to focus on in our remaining time before we bring David Lawns on is re-envisioning our world from a world of war to a world of harmony. And notice I did not say war or peace, because war and peace are part of what I call a duality consciousness paradigm. War is not, in my opinion, opposite of peace. And peace is not what we have when we don't have war. What we have in our war suffering paradigm that is, it has been in motion on this planet, is a duality paradigm that requires the conscious belief of opposites to keep them going. Now, the conscious belief of opposites is, on one level, part of a learning process of developing our consciousness, our conscious awareness, our consciousness power that we have available to us. And in exploring the polarities, we can grow our inner awareness, our inner toolbox, to then learn how they work in the lower dimensional realities. There is a place where duality consciousness, polarity energies are in motion. However, it is a multi-dimensional experience. There are many dimensions going on at the same time. There are dimensions, and these are all my words. These are my words. So you can take these words and have a ball with them in your language. In my language, they are dimensions, and dimensions in my understanding are more or less planes or densities of energy. It's all energy. And as energy rises and falls, you find yourself in a different band or frequency of energy. And in duality consciousness paradigm, it is very committed to the reality, the idea, the consciousness exercise of separating everything. So in the duality consciousness, everything must be separated. So the dimensions must be separated. But that is not my experience. Dimensions are not separated. If there is something going on in one dimension and something going on in another dimension, they are both going on. Our awareness might not be able to access the full dimensional capacity, the full dimensional reality that's going on around us. However, that does not change the fact that all these dimensional experiences and processes are in fact going on at the same time inside of us and also manifesting themselves out in our world. In the multidimensional paradigm of unity consciousness, everything is connected. There is no real lines that say, well, in this dimension it's only this, in that dimension it's only that, whereas in unity consciousness there are specific integrities or specific laws of physics, if you will, that govern, that are prevalent in specific dimensional experience, that they are all connected to everything else. And the metaphor I really like about this is a rainbow. A rainbow, as most all of us have probably seen, has very basic colors. However, when you look at the rainbow for long enough, you see that between the red and the orange are zillions of shades of red orange, and moving into true orange, and then moving into the yellows. We are that dimensional band. We are walking rainbows of energy. We are walking rainbows of experience. And one view of the human process is that we are here to develop our awareness, to develop our experience and our ability to navigate our rainbow. We come in, let's just for the exercise, on a what we call a lower density vibration, the third, fourth dimension, second, third, fourth dimension, the dimensions of appearing solid matter. They are not solid. Science knows this. Science tells us this. When we are ready in our consciousness to get our heads around the fact that though our bodies are really appearing solid and they need a lot of solid stuff, right? They need to eat and they need lots of stuff to keep a body happy, right? Stuff, solid, all that. It is just the exercise of the human experience, and it is not in the unity consciousness, in the big picture, a solid vessel. It is still a vessel of particulates that are all in perfect, absolute genius order as assigned by the universal love intelligence itself. And our bodies, these however many pounds you carry in your biological wonder there, is always transforming itself. The average body changes every single cell. Every single cell is reborn in every single body on average between 2 and 3 weeks, depending on your weight. So that means that as solid as we think our body is, the body itself already knows that it's not solid. It knows that it must continue this organic process of healing and changing and cleansing and moving whatever the energies that it's moving, which we're just now coming to discover more dimensional understandings of our rainbow. Our rainbow accesses the entire heavens in the vessel of our bodies. We are not our bodies. As we understand that more intimately, as we come to each waking day with the reality of that truth, that we are not our bodies, that we are a soul consciousness that has chosen this particular body, this particular life experience, this particular reality to explore, to be of service, to become part of whatever the existing paradigm or dance is at this exact time here in this space. Now, this conversation at this juncture has many places it can go, because when you realize that you are not your body, that you are a soul consciousness having chosen this human form to be here right now. If you are listening to this broadcast, you are possibly in a human body. Now, I do understand that it's possible to listen from other dimensions. So there are, in fact, spirit beings that are listening to this, and some of them are my friends and some of them are not, and that's okay. It's all part of the whole dance. In unity consciousness, it's not they and me, it's we. We are a co-creating organism of this experience, and as co-creating organisms of this experience, as a human being, at this time, I am really grateful to be here to participate in what I experience more and more so tangibly, the shift in the consciousness from the duality, from the fight, from the war, to the we are one. And the more we actually move into we are one, a couple of things happen right away. One of them is that we are faced with ourselves. We are faced with our part in the perceived war, in the perceived conflict. Because war, conflict, suffering is a choice. We all choose that. And there is no wrong way. There's nothing wrong with choosing a suffering reality, because it is only part of the dance that we have chosen to come here for. Every single person in every single dance is doing a very important part of everything, because it's all one dance. So this is really important. We really must come to understand that we are not our bodies, that we are choosing to have this experience, and what the experience is we are choosing to have. As we begin to take responsibility for the experiences that we are we choosing suffering? What is it that we are learning from suffering? What is it that we are teaching from suffering? What is it that we are healing from suffering? Who are the players in our game? Because it's not about us. It's really about all of us. All of us interacting, all of us sharing, all of us affecting the whole. So here we are in this time where we are given an opportunity to understand our place in the we. Now, we are coming to understand that. So the first, not to digress too far, okay. The first thing is we understand that we are choosing and we are taking responsibility. The other thing that happens right away as we vibrate to a unity consciousness reality is we see each other in ourselves. We understand that everything we say, everything we do, everything we think is being heard and felt and received by all those around us. We become intimately aware, almost instantaneously, that there is no way that what I'm thinking is not going to affect somebody else. So it becomes very special to mind our minds and to mind our intentions and to become much more aligned in our heart and our minds and what we call mind. Now, mind, this is a very interesting thing because in our re-envisioning of our world, it is really a special time to take a new paradigm approach. We can re-envision our world from the duality, from the war consciousness, and keep recreating the same war over and over again. Or we can re-envision our world from a unity consciousness, from the knowing of our soul beings choosing to come here, from the knowing that we are, in fact, all one. And all one is bigger than our human family. Not only are we all one with the human family, we are all one with every life form that exists throughout the multiverse. Now, that is a lot. Okay, that's huge. That's a, you know, got to have your coffee for that one. Okay, well, so let's back up just a little bit, because re-envisioning our world is also one of the greatest gifts of the human itself. The human itself has the capacity to co-create with the universe using its inner understanding, its inner consciousness, its inner reality, its inner ability to access this rainbow that we all are. The human is gifted in this way, which in part is why we come here and experience duality and experience all of the life choices and all of the life challenges that we have, because in each one of these experiences, we learn about how our inner world works. In developing our inner world, we are developing our mind-heart capacity. Now, mind-heart is very important, I believe, at this point to specify, because the mind-heart connection is how we feel and think. We are coming from this paradigm that's been very effective in promoting the idea that a human is a brain, that everything that the human does is thought-based, and that the center of consciousness itself is in the brain. And this works very well with a very primary understanding of a human as a material object, as a material-based thing. And I use the word thing because when the I am my brain and the brain is all there is, the brain is the seat of consciousness, in that paradigm, the human itself is a very limited creature. In that paradigm itself, the human is very much body identified. It very much supports the ideas that the human itself is a blob of mud, because when you boil it down, all of our bodies basically are the same composite as mud. So when the brain, if it's a brain thing, stops, then the body goes back to mud. It makes the material-based reality very coherent. However, it's just simply not true, because the human has this other thing. It's called a soul. I would like to suggest that a soul is the part of the human that actually gives it its life, the soul is what creates the animation of the existence of the being. The soul itself has a composite, has a place, has a code that is actually part of the DNA, RNA. This is really important because when you add the soul code, the soul component to who each and every single body being is, it is another place where we recognize each other in unity consciousness. That is, in fact, the place we meet. The material duality reality is the place where we separate. And it is up to us to learn to grow these places inside of ourselves, to move through the rainbow inside of ourselves and learn to view, learn to experience, learn to be part of the higher vibrations. We'll call them higher. Now, I want to use that word higher in a very specific way because we are in our current material-based duality paradigm of conflict. We are also in a place where we have bought this idea that we are our bodies. You know, we have bought this idea that we need to control our lives and we need to control each other and that we must defend our bodies and carry guns and kill to defend our bodies. We've bought that. We believe that. We live that. This is part of the duality, conflict, suffering-based paradigm that we have a choice about now. Do we want to continue living there, or do we want to try something else? Do we want to re-envision our life from a new paradigm reality that is accessible to us and that is always accessible to us in the rainbow that we are? I would like to offer that it is our gift to find that in ourselves and explore it. And there has been an experience in our world in the last 2 weeks that has given me much inspiration and much enthusiasm about the actual manifesting of unity consciousness. This is an example that I think is really special in our exact moment right now. And that is the situation that has been happening in Palestine, Israel. Now, we all have some relationship with this conflict. And I want to be very broad in my exploration of this because the Palestine-Israel conflict is just one conflict on the planet. It happens to be one of the best examples currently of the conflict, the suffering, the war paradigm of duality, material-based consciousness that we can learn a lot from and we can appreciate, we can come to appreciate many of the things that it teaches us about our human psyche, about who we are and ultimately who we are not. And the Israel-Palestine conflict is only one of war reality going on around the globe. So I want to focus on this as an example in a universal context of the reality of this war planet itself, perhaps now showing us signs that we are ready to make a break that we are ready to take a stand, that we are ready to begin the more sincere dialogue of moving forward from the suffering, duality, material-based paradigm. Now, the basic tenets of the Palestine-Israel conflict is that there was a territory and there was a decision made by a self-appointed board, the UN, that came together or was brought together by a global interest in creating a more peaceful war, again, in that duality paradigm, which states that without war, there's peace. Again, we're going to go above that. We're going to transcend war and peace. We're going straight to unity, ultimately. But looking at where we're at, the UN was the body that came together with an international commitment for some to begin a new dialogue to ultimately create a world that is free of the suffering of war. That is where one of the major catalysts for this conflict began, in the assigning of a state for a people that deserved a place. Every person deserves a place. So we know the story that the Palestine-Israel conflict has engulfed much, much, much suffering. It has taken a lot of space in a lot of people's hearts and a lot of people's minds. In the last 2 weeks, we had an experience where the Israeli war machine came out with a vengeance again and began a major genocidal assault again. And this time, what happened was the international community somehow, with friends in high places, was able to arrest this assault. And I say that in that way because we have much to be grateful for in our friends in high places. I call them our friends in high places because they are in high places. They are in high places of consciousness where we have opportunity to develop ourselves in those parts of the rainbow in ourselves, and we might not have full consciousness and ability at this point, but that does not mean that they are not active, that they are not happening, that we ourselves are not participating at the same time. We simply haven't developed that awareness, that dialogue, that understanding, that ability to navigate that in our 3-4-D human body experience. But that does not mean for one half of a millisecond that it is not happening. It is happening. And that is what we have to look forward to. The more we develop this dialogue in ourselves and this awareness in ourselves, we have the ability to offer gratitude for all those incredible beings that have kept this planet from, you know, going really far off the deep end. This is a really good example. I really feel strongly that the human soul is tired of war. We are so tired of war. We don't want more killing. We don't know maybe what we want. We don't know what it looks like not to have war. It has so permeated our consciousness, but unanimously on some level, there was a greater strength that stopped this aggression and then took it to the body that was originally tasked the responsibility of supposedly giving space for a troubled peoples, which is all needing to be in question right now. But this body came together with the sincere commitment by its members to fulfill the task that it was presented as, selling the task of creating a world where we are getting along better and we are living in harmony, where we are exploring new ways to communicate, new ways to be part of our unity with all life. And so the UN was able to acknowledge that calling of humanity to make a world that we can live in, a world where we put down our guns and open our hearts. And this is now. This is our material manifestation of our readiness to move forward in our own personal understanding and developing our own personal rainbow connection, and in moving forward in developing more opportunities to practice harmonious being in ourselves and in our world. This is why I'm so excited, because I am so grateful to be alive at this exact moment in this body. I have chosen to be a maverick, to be a part of this new consciousness, this new understanding, this new re-envisioning of our world from a place of soul, from a place of unity, from a place of knowing that we are, in fact, all one. And we have more questions than answers, naturally, because we haven't yet been here, at least for a very, very long time. And that goes in to the exopolitical conversation of humanity, of this planet, which the exopolitical conversation is the only place I find any sense at all in what our story is here. Again, it's connected to the fact that we are not brain-based material blobs of Earth. We are soul consciousness choosing to have a human experience. We are not our bodies at all. And when we understand that, we understand, whoa, hey, well, what is it, this soul thing, you know, what is the connection to the higher being thing? What is that? You know, you have to go to exopolitics. You have to understand that we are part of the cosmos, that we are part of a universe community, that there are other intelligences, that there are other civilizations, and there are zillions and zillions and zillions of agendas that are all actually even going on right here on planet Earth. This is a very important study for people who are ready to really get into it and really ask the big questions. Now, if you're not there, it's okay. It doesn't matter at all, because there's no hierarchy of consciousness. There's only a hierarchy of soul. And in soul, you realize in your hierarchical evolution, the more your vibration intensifies and connects, you realize all the more how you are part of everything. There's no hierarchy in the way we understand hierarchy of lords above or over somebody. The more your soul evolves, the more you see yourself in everybody. There is no above. There's no better than. That is part of the duality consciousness that we are learning from, but we can transcend now. So, this is a very auspicious time. Every day is auspicious. I guess I've moved into auspicious for time being. It's very exciting. And after all of our excitement getting started today, we are also now about to welcome a fantastic person. His name is David Lawns, and he is a pianist. And one of the things about the Alchemy of Light broadcast that I am very committed to is balance and bringing in things that make us smile, things that make us laugh, and things that give us much thought, things that give us much to do, so much to understand. And so today we have a musician, and I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. Okay, I'm back. Today we're bringing in music, because music is the language, in my opinion, of soul. Music is the language of the universe. When we are back revisiting the reality of our bodies as particulates that are constantly changing and constantly moving through, we realize that everything is a vibration. Everything is a frequency. And hence, there are many associations with that. But in frequency, music is one of the most efficient ways to really get to unity consciousness. Unity consciousness in music is one of those places where we all can be listening to a piece of music and, you know, maybe one expression would be we tap to the beat. Some part of our body just gets the beat. Now, our minds might be having totally different experiences of whatever that music might be, but somehow we're all connected. We're all feeling the beat of this music, and we are in unity. It is very important to have music in this healing process. For me personally, I would be lost without music. I do not do television. I do music because music is where I find my connection enhanced to source creation. And I am really happy to be welcoming David Lawns back to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. We are celebrating the release of his new CD, Christofori's Dream Re-Envisioned. And I am really enthusiastic about both the Christofori's Dream and this Christofori's Dream. We will bring him on to share about this compilation that he has put together. In short, I would like to make an offer that Bartolomeo Christofori was the inventor of the piano in the 17th century. And this CD, Christofori's Dream Re-Envisioned, it's like a blast of gratitude for dreams that come true and for all the beings and all the pieces that make them come true. And David is a joy, and we will be bringing him on in just a few minutes. So, okay, catch my breath. This has been part one of the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Thank you all who have endured those first few minutes while we were figuring out some technical dancing around here. We will now take a brief pause while we are setting up David and I, and in that pause, we're going to offer you one of the songs from his new CD called Wings to Altair. So we will play Wings to Altair for all of you, and then we will be back. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I'm Jamil Graham, your host, and now I am grateful to be welcoming to you all David Lawn. Welcome, David.
Jamil, nice to be with you again.
Likewise, such a pleasure. And we are celebrating today the release of your new disc, Cristofori's Dream, Re-Envisioned. And would you please share with the listeners, in brief, the story of Cristofori's Dream and somehow creatively encapsulate your career and how the music was growing and then launched, and how Cristofori's Dream Re-Envisioned became such an important reflection for you?
Well, you know, the kind of the seed for the song, the title track, and just so your listeners know that Cristofori, Bartolomeo Cristofori, was an Italian instrument maker, harpsichord builder primarily, and an inventor who lived in the late 16 and early 1700s. And we have Cristofori to thank for the invention of the piano. So let's just, we count back, well, 25 plus years ago, a friend of mine had given me a book called Passion for the Piano. And in reading through the book, it was actually just a fun little book, had a lot of interesting facts and pictures of different pianists and different styles of the piano. But in the front of the book, and what really kind of caught me by surprise and started me on this journey was a little dedication. There was a picture of a woman in the front of the book. Looked like she was playing a harpsichord, but actually it was an early pianoforte, which is what Cristofori named his instrument initially. And pianoforte literally means loud, soft. And that was a big deal back in the day because the harpsichord was kind of the instrument that most keyboard players were, you know, kind of the bread and butter instrument. It's monodynamic, meaning, you know, no matter how hard or how light you hit the keys, you're basically just going to get the same volume. So Cristofori wanted to make an instrument that was more expressive and responded to the touch. It kind of freaked people out at first. They thought it was too hard to control. But it was kind of the idea was that you needed to control this with your hands. And so anyway, long story short, I saw this dedication. It said, this book is dedicated to Bartolomeo Cristofori, the inventor of the piano. And that hit me immediately, just like, whoa, I've been playing the piano my whole life. Never stopped once to think about an inventor of this instrument. And there it was. So I saw the name Cristofori, and in my kind of mind's eye, my imagination, the word Christ Euphoria came into it. And that kind of like, whoa, what's that? And then almost immediately following that, the title, Cristofori's Dream, popped into my head. So it was a real defining moment for me. So I kind of jotted the title down. And I actually did a little sketch of the music and then just put it away. But that's really how the initial inspiration for the song. And then when I got a phone call, probably a month or two later from my record label, I was on the Narada label at the time. And they asked me about, did I have any ideas for my next recording? And I really didn't. I didn't think I did anyway. And then once the question was asked, a moment later, I said, oh, yes, I have a concept called Cristofori's Dream. And the label representative was very taken, said, whoa, that's cool. I like the sound of that. So that kind of forced my hand, and I began finishing the song and finishing up the music that ended up being the album Cristofori's Dream. And then historically speaking, as far as the record industry goes, that album really took off and became the very first number one adult alternative new age album in Billboard magazine. And that was quite a heady experience for myself to know that I had a number one album. It stayed there for almost 6 months, became a gold album. It's probably nearly platinum by now. And that really kind of set the stage for me to, you know, to really soar out and tour and do my, you know, do what I do as a solo pianist and as an entertainer. And I have to thank the inventor of the piano for that that wonderful moment.
I really appreciate that return to gratitude and the way that in this example, it's very accessible to the bigger pictures that go on in our world and how, oh gosh, how many things can we thank our ancestors for that we take for granted, that we seldom notice even, you know, and subtle things or less subtle things. Like, for instance, I'm female, right? Born in this female body. I'm 49. So I have learned in my lifetime that the female process on this planet for the generation just 10 years prior to me had a very important role in bringing to me things that I take for granted now. And I go out here in America and I get jobs and I can live on independence, a more independent life, and even the way I view myself as a sovereign being, you know, those little things passed on from the many, many, many generations of people who went before me. And I don't even need to identify with being in this form. This form itself is reaping the benefit of all those that went before. And it's, this story is so much more accessible in a way to that equation that, you know, you're playing the piano. The piano is your life. You know, it's given you everything that made you happy. It brought you sustenance. It gave you your tool for creative outlet. And somebody made that, you know? that's just such an important thing to stop and review. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the piano was basically so close to me, just in my face every day. And yeah, like I said, I had never stopped to think about someone inventing the instrument. And then, yeah, when that dawned on me, it really was. I was never so filled with gratitude as I was writing that song. And what's really amazing, that particular song, I think what really happened for me was not only was I writing something out of gratitude, but I was kind of tapping in to an historical figure. It's like this giant thought form of history of the piano and just... You stop to think about what would the world be like without this one person's invention. I mean, there's, you know, you could point to quite a few people in history that really had a major impact, and I can think of none other that had that big of an impact on the world of music. I guess you could point to, you know, instrument makers like Stradivarius and such, but the piano, let's, you know, name one genre of music that you don't hear the piano in. And other than maybe some, you know, world type music that where, you know, piano is not used, but it's in jazz and blues and classical, and you hear it sampled, and it's in hip hop and rap and rock and roll and on and on, you know. So I think we have a lot of us, I'm hoping, feel this gratitude for this man, Cristofori, because, like I tell my audiences, if it wasn't for him, I'd be up on stage with an accordion or something. And no one wants to hear that. Just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard a funny joke. Okay, if somebody throws an accordion and a banjo out the window, which lands first?
Go ahead. Which lands first?
Who cares? It's not bad. Because those two instruments have a reputation of not being the most favored or the easiest to, you know, just sit and listen to. They have very, you know, strong personalities, and whereas the piano is a lot more amiable for the average, you know, for most people. But the accordion and the banjo are two that people really love or really hate. So they don't, you know, so the joke is, oh, who cares, you know. Bad joke, really bad joke, okay.
There's lots of great, great bad jokes about musical instruments, so. So now, what else can I tell you about the, you know, it was really, I got to say, it was in putting together this new, basically what I did, Jamel, is I went and decided I wanted to re-release Cristofori's Dream, but I didn't want to, just a few years ago, well, I would say 10 years ago, Narada put out a remastered version of the recording, which is, you know, standard practice in the music business. They keep figuring out ways to kind of, you know, rebrand and market things that have already been out. So I just thought I wanted to do something more than just, you know, put another version of the same recording out. So I decided to make to actually re-record the entire album, but this time, instead of producing it like I had before with strings and other, you know, quite a few other musicians participated in the first recording, that I would do and go very zen and just play the music and record the music the way it was written, just as solo piano music. And it was kind of refreshing to be able to do that. It also allowed me to kind of open the arrangements up a little bit, keeping really, you know, true to the melody, but allowing myself a little more kind of variation on a theme. So that's what I did for not every piece, but several of the pieces on the new recording have been kind of fleshed out, and it was a lot of fun. I got to say, it was a lot of fun, and I'm actually really enjoying playing this music in concert as well, because it's some of the music I have not played since I recorded it. So it's been a joy to kind of go back and kind of, you know, reconstruct and re-envision, if you will, you know, the music that this music I did, you know, 25 years ago. That was a long time.
Surely a lot happens in 25 years, eh?
Geez, tell me about it.
Have you noticed in your musical compositions how that's reflected in the composition? How is that relationship? I mean, in my book, I consider you one of the musicians that I admire and respect, because your craft, it comes very close to your soul calling. You know, you're very much in your being in your music, and I know that's not true for all musicians that, you know, get airplay and so on. So for me, that gets a special nod. And so in your experience of these 20 odd years in your career, how have you noticed your composition, your current composition, reflecting the notes of your soul, and how have you integrated the demands of the business with that? Because you have labels, right? And you have contractual obligations. So there is some balancing that goes on in there. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the music business.
Well, how do you do that? How do you stay true to soul when you want to pay your bills and, you know, keep the Narada happy? And
well, it's kind of a two-edged sword, because initially, when the genre of what we call New Age music, this kind of new instrumental style of music, came on board, it was, people were, you know, there's a lot of experimentation going on, and initially it wasn't successful in terms of selling lots of records, so people weren't as concerned, you know, they weren't, but as soon as there's money to be had and business to be done, people start to get a little nervous and start second guessing themselves. So I kind of needed to kind of deal with people's input from the record labels. And I've always tried to be open-minded enough to, you know, take people's suggestions and at least try them on. You know, I try not to dismiss it, you know, out of hand, but, so actually I did get initially a fair amount of, you know, good guidance from my record label. And as time went on and the whole concept of, you know, new age music started to kind of morph, became a little more commercial. I got to the point at with another label after my contract ran out. They really didn't, you know, they didn't want me to put out any more music in that. They wanted me to continue as David Lawns, as a pianist, but the idea was, well, we should stay current. Meaning that at that time the radio format had switched over to what is known as smooth jazz. And I could easily relate to a lot of the smooth jazz because to me that was just kind of like the stuff I was playing back in the 70s. It was instrumental music. It had kind of a groove. It was funky. I'll admit here to you and all your listeners that at one point I was in a disco band back in the 70s. You know, but that was, you know, because I was a journeyman and I was doing the kind of music that I needed to do to make a living, or at least that's, you know, that's the way the story went. And I had a lot of experience in, you know, in the world of, you know, making music that was more rhythmic and funky. I also play the drums. So, I have a pretty strong rhythm bass. So making the switch from this, you know, more romantic, spiritually kind of feeling music, introspective music, to the smooth jazz arena was not hard, but I didn't really enjoy it at first. And it was actually, I guess at first it was like, well, what do you mean? Why do I have to do that? You know, but I was under contract and, you know, people were saying, well, let's just try this and let's try that. So I've tried on a few different, concepts, and I ended up making a couple of albums that were more in, you know, what you would call smooth jazz, and yet they were very well accepted at radio. But my core audience, I don't think, really bought into that initially. Some of my followers did, but it was like, well, what happened to the really nice, you know, mellow, romantic kind of music that you're known for? So I'm kind of, you know, I'm feeling like, well, I've had the experience of working with major labels and working, you know, with musicians from all walks of life. So I guess in a way it's for me, it's easy for me to put different hats on, but I'm most comfortable when I'm just sitting at the piano by myself. I'm having this kind of conversation. It's really a conversation with soul. You know, it's a reflection of my soul. And as time goes on, I think, you know, my approach to writing and performing, it keeps deepening, which is great. You know, it's kind of like, I guess it's, you know, it's kind of like a good bottle of wine or something that kind of starts to mature over time and really gets a kind of a fullness. And that's, you know, that's where I feel like I'm, that's where I am today. And it's pretty cool. You know, I'm really enjoying the process of getting back into my own world of composing, which is kind of, you know, it's slightly classical, but I have lots and lots of different influences, and I've kind of allowed those to kind of wash over me as time has gone on. In fact, the last 4 years, and the last time you and I talked, I was deep into Beatlemania.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, again, out of gratitude, I was paying tribute to my composing mentors, who really initially were John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and George Harrison, because I really held them up as a kid as, you know, that's the ultimate thing. I mean, that's the coolest thing, being able to write and sing and record your own material. And there's lots of other composers and you know, bands from that era that I could point to as well that were influential, but really none more than the Beatles. And I know I'm in good company when I say that, because it's kind of hard to find people that want to diss the Beatles. You can go ahead and diss them, but you know, you're just spitting in the wind when you do that.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard anybody diss them. I mean, I've certainly met variations on the theme of enthusiasm, including kids younger than me who know every album and every nuance of whatever they can get their hands on and the stories of their lives. But I've never, in terms of the Beatles, I can't say I have heard people say they were yucky or, you know, anything on that level. They just, oh yeah, they just kind of know them or they love them. Somewhere in between, you know. Which isn't true of all of them at that time, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Like Bob Dylan, you can find the lovers and the haters of Bob Dylan, right? But the Beatles definitely, they had a mission. They had a very important sort of planetary assignment, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how aware they were of it, but you know, not too long ago, I read a book called Everyday Mystic, and it was really about the spiritual life of George Harrison. And mm-hmm. George and his wife really are the ones, they basically kind of convinced everybody to go to India and, you know, spend time with the Maharishi, learning transcendental meditation. And they didn't necessarily stick with it. George did. He became very very much a student of meditation. But the fact that the Beatles did that, and in fact it was George's doing, George and his wife Patty, I believe, they turned a whole generation of Western kids onto meditation that probably, it's hard to say, but who may never have gone down that path. And at the time there was, you know, there was a lot of drugs being used, and drugs are a good way to change your mental state, but very unpredictable. Whereas meditation is, you know, it's a slow process, and it's a great way to not only, you know, have some spiritual insights, but it's good for the body and to calm the mind and keep the stress level down. So in George himself, we have to thank for introducing at least the Western world to the concept of, you know, inner exploration through meditation. And he also was the first rock star to gather together other, you know, well-known musical acts and create a concert performance around that his concert for Bangladesh was the first of a multitude of concerts that started to happen to raise money and to raise awareness through rock music about social issues, you know, the farming issue and hunger and environmental issues and on and on. So not only do we have the Beatles to thank, you know, to just all this great music, but they really changed the world in a big way, you know, beyond just, you know, having a bunch of hit songs, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. Absolutely. I would agree. And, you know, you mentioned in our last chat, I think it's a good road to explore a little further your experience. You had mentioned you were a meditator, and this is something that was it George who inspired you to start meditating?
Well, what happened here, it's funny that I'll never forget it. One of my good friends, I was hanging out, I think I was about 16 years old, and I think we read in this, it was a teenage magazine, like Tiger Beat or one of these things that was out of time. And it had an article about the Beatles and how they had gone to India and how they were meditating. It was just a little fluff article, but somewhere in the article it said that they were given a mantra which they chanted, and that was their, you know, that was how they entered into a meditative state. So my friend and I, not knowing anything, and we just took the word mantra and we started chanting mantra. I mean, I don't know if anything actually happened, but to answer your question, yes, I think I really have to tip my hat to, you know, because I think the Beatles did, they at least kind of got me interested in well, what is meditation? I think I'd heard of it, but because they were doing it, then it was cool. And then I found out after reading this book about that called The Everyday Mystic, the George Harrison book, he had the same, he was really into the Paramahansa Yogananda. And Yogananda put out a book called Autobiography of a Yogi, which I encourage everyone to read if you've never read it. It's an amazing book. I think it came out in the 30s or the 40s. It might have been later, but it's just an amazing look into the mystical world of India. And then it's the life story of Paramahansa Yogananda. He was considered the first yogi. They called him a yogi Christ because he really blended Christianity and it's more on the more mystical side of Christianity with the more mystical side of the things that he had grown up with. He was a Hindu. And he came to America, and this I believe that this was either the late 30s or somewhere in the 40s. He was just a small man, but he would come together, and he would come together and speak to people. And he was drawing these huge crowds of thousands and thousands of people to hear him speak. And he became like this superstar, a spiritual superstar. Anyway, George was very much into Paramahansa Yogananda, and I didn't know that until I read this book. And Yogananda was also one of the, I guess I could call a teacher that really opened my eyes up to a lot of that material. And it was nice to see that I kind of was in a way on the same wavelength. As George was, and then he turned all the Beatles on, and they all apparently read that book, and so, like I said, a lot of them didn't maybe stick with the meditation, but it was we really have the lads from Liverpool to thank for getting us all up. Hey, they started the new age. It's the Beatles, So anyway.
Well, you stuck with it, right? You came and went, and then meditation has become a regular part of your life now. Yes.
Yes, I'm not. I'm not one of these. I don't really follow a religion or a set kind of ceremony, but I'm interested in lots of different things. So I've kind of create my own rituals and my own approach to meditation. And I'll pick up a little bit here and a little bit there, but I think really for most of us, that's a good way to go because, we all take information and ideas, we all have different ways of learning and processing information. And I think it should be the same way for our, if you just listen to your heart and listen to that small voice inside and kind of follow the muse, as it were, you will, I think, as long as you get to a place in your life where you can kind of trust, your higher sensibilities, you're going to be okay, I think, so that's really been my path is to, listen to my higher self. And I think we all know when we're doing the right thing. And it's a process and it's a way of, creating good habits. And one of those good habits is to really listen and listen to your body and listen to your mind and see, kind of check in. And a lot of times, the meditation is really a great way to do that. It helps to, at least helps to settle things down a bit to where you can kind of really get a good reading on your health and your lifestyle and all that. So, yeah, I, I like to meditate, and music, of course, is a great meditation. And obviously, I spend a lot of time in that world as well.
Yeah, is it possible that kind of your piano is one of your mentors in meditation, in a matter of speaking?
Oh, definitely. I try to tell people, and I've had this conversation with friends of mine, and I don't know if people would understand, but I don't feel like I'm a piano player. I feel like I just use the piano is just an instrument that is really just there. It's just a way for me to reflect more of my inner voice. And the piano is just, I mean, I am a piano player, but it doesn't feel like I feel like I'm using the piano in a different way than a lot of musicians might use the piano. And I think that could be musically, I think that could be apparent just in the touch that I have, and the just kind of the way that I, kind of caress the piano, as opposed to, I mean, I do get into, you know, I can get in and just rock hard on piano as well too. But there's something that happens when I really am in the zone, and I'm just barely touching the keys, and I'm kind of trying to create this, this world of sound that is reflective of what's going on inside of me. And when I'm performing, I love to, I don't like to travel, but I love to perform. So once I'm on stage, it's like I'm back home. And I'm actually kind of chanting, and there's different affirmations and things that I'm saying. It's like I'm praying while I'm playing the piano, in a way. And it's all unspoken. But I really believe that music, being what it is, it takes on the charge of the musician. So that's why music can be, it can get us to do anything. You know, really serious rock and roll has this very primal sexual feeling to it. Classical music may be a bit more intellectual and coming from a higher, a higher intellect. And music just, we can make people, it'll make people laugh and cry and dance. It'll make people pick up arms and go to war. I mean, just, it's a very, very powerful force. And I've probably mentioned this before, but music is invisible. So you think about that for a minute. You know, it's totally invisible. And it's pure spirit is what it is, you know. Of course, you can see it. I mean, we can see it on a graph or on a meter. But the music itself, it's in the air, it's invisible. And isn't that cool? You know?
Yeah. It so, is cool. And go ahead.
No, I'm good.
Well, in the conversation of how music affects us, I like that tool for as a segue to unity consciousness in that regard, because it transcends the busyness of the intellectual mind in this. Well, the irrational, rational thinking, I call it irrational, rational thinking, because it's kind of like a dominant chatter sets in, and it is a very strong force in keeping the duality reality intact, because as long as we are in our irrational, rationally based chatter, we assume we're different. It keeps us in our I am me and not you place, where music cuts through all that. And music brings us into the vibrational alignment that we all share organically, whether we like it or not. You know, we all feel something in our body. Even deaf people hear music.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Especially instrumental music, when there's nothing against lyrics, but for myself, I know when I travel and perform in other countries, it's, instrumental music, especially, it's so universal. People relate to it regardless of, you know, what intellectually, what they're thinking in terms of, you know, their words. And so when you remove lyrics sometimes from music and just allow the music itself to work its magic, you know, you don't even need words anymore. It's just sound and vibration. So it's all very cosmic.
Yeah, that's of course what I like about it, being a little more spacey than the average kid, but definitely yeah. the cosmic quality and the words are an interesting thing because they're, you know, the Beatles song Imagine, I was in Spain and staying with a family that did not speak English, did not speak English, no English in this house whatsoever. So her friend brings over the Beatles, and this person, these people who don't know English or anything, Imagine comes on, and she's crying. She doesn't know the words.
Huh. Well,
you know, something's going on there.
Well, it is John. I mean, you know, you've got a genius at work, working on a lot of different levels, and obviously the lyrical message is very cool, but it's also a very beautiful, you know, it's a very beautiful piece of music too. So somehow it looks like, you know, he was going straight to the heart with this friend of yours that was not understanding the words, but very cool. Yeah.
And that piece of music is particularly simple too. It's a very simple piece of music, you know, musically speaking, you would know that technically speaking, it's not a huge amount of chords or anything. It's really.
Yes. Simple. Well, that's its appeal too. I think if music doesn't necessarily need to be complicated in order to, you know, to be able to kind of, reach across and communicate something to someone. Just like a simple, you know, when you're having a conversation with a friend, you don't need to use a lot of impressive vocabulary. Sometimes just the very simplest thing delivered at the right moment is the most effective, you know. So that's kind of partially my philosophy too with music is I've really focused on, you know, I understand intellectually the theory of music and the chord voicings and the scales and all the stuff that kind of adds up to, which makes, you know, the whole matrix of music, but using that in a simple way and creating simple melodies, you have a much better chance of connecting with your listener and with the audience. And that really has become my goal is it's, you know, if the melody isn't strong, you know, the heart probably won't relate to it. If it's a strong move, a strong rhythm, yeah, your body will get, you know, might make you want to dance. But, you know, I want to be able to, you know, communicate at maybe a little higher level using a strong melody, or, you know, being able to, you know, use a strong melody to build the musical structure around, as it were, with the chords and such and how you produce it. Without the melody, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a house of cards for me as far as the, you know, writing a song.
That's very interesting. Do you have an experience when you've mentioned a few times higher and lower and stuff like that? Do you how do you experience a higher vibration or a higher communication?
Well, let's see. that's a big question. Depends on what era you're talking about. As far as, you know, I've had some amazing meditational experiences where the vibration in my body and my mind is just so high beyond, you know, any kind of artificial stimulus or such. But as a performer, that feeling can wash over me in the middle of a, you know, as I'm performing a piece of music, I kind of pick up the, it feels like I'm surfing sometimes, and this, these waves of appreciation and love come from the audience, and you can just feel it. You know, when you're in a, you know, in a concert situation, whether you're the performer or you're in the audience, when that connection is happening, everyone's aware of it. You know, there's just that, I'm sure you've gone to concerts where there was just all of a sudden, you know, the, everything kind of builds to a peak, and everybody is feeling that moment. It's kind of that, it's a group experience, but in a way you become of, you know, one mind. And that, you know, that's really a great, it's a great experience. Probably better for the performer, because it's, you know, I'm on stage and there's several hundred people out, you know, having an experience, but I kind of become, the performer ends up kind of becoming the lens that things get focused through. And that's, it could be pretty heady, you know, pretty heady experience. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
Well, yeah, I think you put us on the road there. I mean, I think that's an interesting point you bring up, to use the word heady, where the temptation is to sort of take it personal. Well, they're all looking at me, but it's not you, is it?
Exactly. That's the other thing that I've worked on for my career is, I mean, you got to know, to get on stage and to be a performer, you have to have a very healthy ego. Otherwise, just, you know, you may not find yourself wanting to do any of that. But on the other hand, being humble, and it's an honor, you know, to serve in that way. So yeah, you know, I've had the experience of people say, oh yeah, you're really famous and yada yada and all that. Well, great, you know, but the joy of it really is to be able to get out of the way and just be this, you know, to be the thing, the person that's able to kind of act as a channel, so to speak, to allow the music and the expression, you know, to flow freely without a heavy ego attached to it. And then that allows people open up to that, I think, and they have their own experience with the music. And at that point it's about them and it isn't about me. And that's just fine. That's just fine. I don't want it to be about me all the time. That gets boring. So, you know.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Jamel, I wanted to also let your listeners know that I'm very excited about a brand new Christmas record I just put out too. Speaking of, you know, getting into that more of that spiritual side of you know, celebration, and just let me do a little plug here. People want to go to my website, davidlawns.com. They will be able to find out all about this new solo piano record called Joy Noel. So I have two new, I call them my children, two new CDs to unleash on the world.
Well, tell us about that, Joy Noel. What songs did you choose, or did you go a traditional route? Is this on a particular label, or was this, what songs did you choose? I mean, the Christmas, the Yuletide, the Solstice, it's a huge plethora there to choose from.
Well, it is. I tend to go more for some of the, I drew on some of the older English and French Christmas carols, and I can never resist the urge. Or I can't resist putting my own stamp on it. And that's the thing with some of these older Christmas carols, musically, there isn't a lot of material to work with. Usually a Christmas carol is a verse and a chorus, and then there's like 10 or 15 verses that none of us can remember. But so I take the essence of the Christmas, the song, in this case there were a number of traditional pieces. Coventry Carol, which is a beautiful, old, very old English piece of music. Of course, everybody knows Carol of the Bells and We Three Kings. So I've done arrangements of those. Bring a Torch, Jeanette Isabella is a beautiful French carol. And then I discovered this one carol that I really had fun doing called Noël Novelet, and it's an old French carol. And I didn't really recognize it as a Christmas song, but as soon as I heard that melody, I don't know, I just went, wow, this is, it brought something back. So it's one of those melodies that I'm sure people will recognize, even though they may not remember it as a Christmas song. But then John Lennon gets the last word as far as all my Beatles stuff, because I'm done doing these reimagined arrangements. But the second cut on the album is a solo piano rendition of John's Happy Christmas, War is Over. Most people might remember that as So This Is Christmas. And then there's quite a bit of improvisation, my own little improvisations that I use from time to time to kind of thread some of the themes together. And there is a piece called Angel in My Stocking, another original composition. And then I did a real sweet, what I call a heavy mellow version of Jingle Bells. That was a lot together. So it's just nice, it's just a nice, I think a nice, for the most part, relaxing, mellow, piano album to put on, to listen to in depth, or just to have it in the background, kind of tinkling as you're, doing whatever you do during the holidays. So, and at this point, it's only both Christopher's Dream Re-envisioned and Joy Noel at this point have been released on my website, and they'll be eventually on iTunes and Amazon and all the usual places. But initially, I did an easy release to get them out for the holiday season, so I'd have music to offer my fans either on my website or in my concerts.
Very nice. And what's the production level of the new one of Joy Noel? Is it mostly solo work or little both? Or
I just. Yeah, I decided that it's all solo piano, recorded. Okay. I have my own little home studio, and I've been actually using this this beautiful Yamaha piano for quite a few years to make a number of my recordings. So that part of it has been kind of nice, that the technology is state-of-the-art, but I'm able to, for the most part, just work out of my home, which takes some of the pressure off as far as, got to get this done, and the clock's running and all that. So I took my time and spent a number of months throughout the spring and the summer making sure all the arrangements were the way I wanted. And so it's just straight up solo piano. What can I say? Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Solstice. Happy Kwanzaa. Tis the season, now that we're in December. Can you believe how fast this year has gone? Is this amazing or what?
It is amazing. It is amazing. I lost the day this week. I completely lost the whole day this week. It is amazing. The times are amazing. And, we're, can you believe it, David? This hour has flown by. We're on our last time here. In the conversation of amazing and time and our world, and I feel like music is such. Let me just share this. I feel like music is the language of the universe, and thanks to people like yourself who've been able to just stay in that soul place and keep that beat going. It's such a great service that you give to all of us, that you've remained in your truth and you've remained in your knowing of that. It's a very powerful place, and I just want to thank you very much for continuing your prolific sharing, and how great it is you got yourself set up there so you could just pull up to the studio and make some more music, That's That's really nice the way you've allowed that to happen. So I really want to just acknowledge you and thank you. And so we're looking at the last 5 minutes or so, and I believe that we could finish. We could have our 5 minutes to chat and then allow...
You have all the time in the world.
Oh, thank you. I just got the message that we're comfortable on time, so we can finish our conversation up and then allow the Cristofori's dream to share the music of Cristofori's dream from the re-envisioned CD after we close our conversation. How does that sound?
That sounds like a good plan. I like that. So,
cool.
And thank you for your sweet words on all that. But you know, there's only really two things that humans are here for. One is to create, and the other is to serve. And if you look at anything that people do, really, that's whether they're really doing the work that they're meant to do or whatever, but really that's what's going on. They're either creating something good, bad, or indifferent. And like Bob Dylan says, you got to serve somebody, you know? and that's what, you know, that's what we do. So I feel fortunate to be able to be in a position where I can create, and with my creation and with, you know, the creation of music, you know, a long time ago, I asked myself, what does the world need? And that was a question I asked myself about, you know, how I would fit in as a musician. And the answer came back, the world needs to be healed. And I thought, well, that's cool. So, I mean, that isn't obviously the answer that everyone is going to get. But that was kind of a turning point for me, going from at that time, you know, playing in clubs, and I was writing music for commercials and this and that, and you know, being in the studio and helping other people out. And I just got to the point where I made that conscious shift of wanting to create music that had more of a healing quality to it, as opposed to music that was loud and raucous and, you know, trying to get people's attention. And all that. I've done, you know, lots of different styles of music, played lots of rock and roll and jazz and funk and all that. But serving, you know, the world with the music that I create, and you know, creating music that has a healing or at least a stress relieving quality, or a quality that allows people to tap into their own creativity. That's another real benefit I've had, as I've heard from a lot of writers and painters and other creative people, and they love music. It helps them to create as well. So, and they've told me that, you know, my music in particular maybe has been, you know, something they tend to put on while they're painting or doing their writing or what have you. So that's pretty cool to know that, you know, what I've been able to create is helping other people to create, because that's the name of the game.
Well, actually, I'm one of those too that has put on your music when I'm writing or drawing or in my creative mode. So I'm in that camp too, David. But I have a question for you. If my ticket's just a couple minutes past, are you okay with that? Because I know it's a little bit of a big question. Or shall we just close here? We'll leave you that. Go ahead. The question is, all right then, love. The question is, in the picture of the world needing healing, I feel like we are at a precipice. We are at this place where, I know we don't need to go into too much of the politics, but we are aware that the UN did acknowledge Palestine as a state, which in the very strong symbolic conversation, in my interpretation, is the collective consciousness of humanity saying no more war. And it's not personal, it's, you know, not going into sides or whatever, but I don't want to go down that road, but I want to stay on the road of the human consciousness, the collective human reality coming to a place in this exact moment in this moment where we have collectively come to say no more war. And in looking at that as our next step, healing obviously is a given, right? And I wonder if you've visited that in your mind, in your heart, in your music, in your exploration, and when you visit that idea of healing the world, and obviously you visit the idea, you know, if you're going to put John Lennon's, you know, Christmas song on there, you know, this is something that's crossed your mind. And I wonder if you can share with us your vision of how the world ends war. How does that look?
Well, it's actually really simple, but it takes everybody's focus and attention, because I think ultimately to think that we can create world peace through the means of military or government is pretty much, by now people should figure out that that's a total illusion. Other people are manipulating, you know, the planet as we're through politics and, you know, through military action and all that. It just creates pain and suffering, but it creates a lot of money, you know. So, and business and the infrastructure of the war machinery and, you know, the military industrial complex and all that. But it's real simple. Every person, to create world peace, we will have world peace when every person has come to a place of peace inside of themselves. And until that time, and you know, there's more and more people on the planet now have at least started the process of turning away from, you know, from believing war and believing in the people that, you know, say they have our best interests at heart. And then trusting themselves, trusting their own soul. And it's really not even enough to trust the church or religion or anything, you know, that's organized around that. Not I'm putting that down, but we can see the result. I just look at the results of the institutions. What have they really done? Well, you know, it's always a two-edged sword, but ultimately, like I was saying, just simply, if each person took responsibility for their own feelings, their own actions, their own spiritual path, then I think that's how we get to peace. There are some giant things that have to happen. It's unfortunately humans a lot of times don't respond until their back is up against the wall. But I think we're at that point in history where, as far as the environment and the economy and, you know, just the way society is and the overpopulation and we're coming up against the shortages of water. And there's no end to the list of litany of sorrows of, you know, things that could go wrong and have been going wrong. But the good news is that in your own world, and there are as many worlds as there are humans on the planet. The idea of being one world is a beautiful image, but the reality is each of us lives in our own world, in our own minds, in our own hearts, in our own bodies, in our own communities, in our own environments, on and on. So each of us, like I say, taking responsibility for just our own part, just our own world, you know, I think you put that all together and you get enough souls that have done that. And there are many that are in the process of doing that. Thank God. You know, we've come a long way, but we have, still have a ways to go. So basically in a nutshell, that's the sermon for the day.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And yeah, being the change, you know, being the change. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, David, for taking time out. And I wish you all the best in the new release and the journey of your life. And thank you again for coming back to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. We are coming now. We'll go ahead and let this conversation close. And we... have been listening to David Lawns, and we can find David, more information about David and his new releases at davidlawns.com. That's DAVIDLANZ.com. And I'm Jamil Graham, your host, and I want to thank you all, the listeners. Thank you to the good people at BBS. Thank you, David. Thank you to the ancestors who brought us all here, and for all the beings and spirit that have been joining us in this broadcast. So that is my close. Would you like to offer a note of close? And then we will offer the good people the copy of the re-record of Cristofori's Dream after we offer your final note.
Well, I just want to say thank you again for having me on your show, and best of luck to you. And it's a great service that you're offering your listeners. And I want to say to everyone, just, Happy New Year, and keep your eye on the prize and focus on the light. And God bless you, and look forward to the next time we chat.
Thank you, David. Likewise. All right, then. Signing off and signing in to Cristofori's Dream by David Lawn. Take good care until next time. Take good care of yourselves, and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.